Hello again, this is Pat, and I am reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, January the 23rd. On page 1, plan to reopen theater holds some promise, Gordon Woods reporting. In Clinton, the Clintonian Eagle Theater closed permanently effective January the 5th, but now preliminary work is going on for a plan to reopen it. Clintonia Eagle Theater owner Eric Gubelman told the Clinton Journal this week the sheriff's sale was postponed for 3 weeks because there was an offer that was sent to Newtek, Gubelman said. Newtek Small Business Finance, LLC, is the company suing for foreclosure. Gubelman told the Journal earlier there was at least the possibility Newtek might be willing to work with him so he could reopen. Gubelman said this week the offer didn't come from the theater, but came on behalf of the theater. Until the rescheduled date for the sheriff's sale, Gubelman said a developer with multiple interests in Clinton would work with the city of Clinton on a plan that could reopen the theater. He said the developer also has other projects he plans to discuss with the city. Gubelman said necessarily plans could not be divulged yet. There were some contingencies to their offer that require not only traditional financing, but coming to a common agreement with the city, Gubelman said. Gubelman added that the 3-week period of the sale was postponed could be sufficient time to know if the plan is viable. He said ultimately it would be a multi-month process, but the theater property could be in friendly hands before then. The foreclosure legal notice and notice of the sheriff's sale for the Clintonia Eagle appeared in the Journal. The sale has been postponed until February the 9th at 10 a.m., according to Roop.com. The website shows the opening bid amount as well as the amount of the judgment. Gubelman also owns theaters in Robinson and Streeter, which face similar fates. Gubelman said the theater in Robinson might benefit from a plan similar to that for Clinton. He said the Streeter situation was more complicated. The closures were attributed to the effects of COVID-19 pandemic, as well as the growth of streaming services and challenges in the film industry in general. Gubelman, in an earlier Facebook post, said that while there was strong community support for the theaters, financial support to continue operations had not been forthcoming. Gubelman wrote in his Facebook post that it was clear for the past 2 years, survival was unlikely without recapitalization. This may not quite be the end of the story, even if the main arc has been resolved. Gubelman wrote, 6 months ago, we assumed any attempt at revival would mean negotiating with multiple creditors, a maze of competing interests, and very little daylight. The foreclosure process has, paradoxically, simplified. As an exciting new season at the museum approaches, the DeWitt County Museum Association is extending an invitation to join the DeWitt County Museum Association for the 2026 museum year. An annual membership is available for as little as $20. Through a membership, a member will support the C.H. Moore Homestead DeWitt County Museum Association in its continuing efforts to preserve and interpret DeWitt County's unique heritage and history, provide quality educational opportunities for students and adults, host annual and special events, promote local tourism, maintain the C.H. Moore Homestead, which includes the house, carriage barn, farm exhibit buildings, grounds, and historical collection. Enhance the local economy, organize and fund the Apple and Pork Festival, and encourage pride in DeWitt County's past and present. The association has promoted and preserved DeWitt County's history and heritage since 1967. DeWitt County Museum Association membership also comes with benefits, such as unlimited admission-free daily museum tours, unlimited free admission to the annual quilt show, admission-free house tours during the Apple and Pork Festival, and unlimited free admission to all holiday and candlelight tours. Guest privileges at the $50 rate or higher. Unlimited free admission for you and your guests, family, friends, and associates when accompanied by you, the membership holder. Complimentary subscription to the Homestead Gazette biannual newsletter. The satisfaction that comes with supporting an active nonprofit organization, the historic landmark, and Apple and Pork Festival. While members are under no obligation to become involved with museum activities, anyone wishing to become an active associate is encouraged to do so. Many volunteer opportunities are available. You can also help us by attending our special events, making purchases at the museum gift shop, and encouraging friends to do the same. To request a membership form or for additional details about membership, contact Joey Long, Museum Director, at 217-935-6066. That's 217-935-0666. Dues are collected annually and each January. So now is the Playground Fence for CES in Motion. Gordon Woods reporting. The Clinton Unified School District is currently getting bids to build a fence around the playground at Clinton Elementary School, CES. The subject came up during Tuesday's school board meeting. A parent of an autistic student who will attend CES next school year expressed her concern that the open playground at the school could lead to some autistic children wandering beyond the school grounds. Her primary concerns were traffic along Illini Drive and a retention pond located nearby. For children like my son, an open playground surrounded by roads located near a busy intersection and not far from a body of water is an ongoing and serious safety concern, she said. Without a fence, with a latching gate, the risk was greater an autistic student would leave school grounds, she said. She added this was common among children with autism, and up to 50% of children with autism wander from safe spaces. Drowning and injuries from traffic are the leading causes of fatalities when autistic students leave school grounds on their own, she said. She also was concerned about the issue of equal access for autistic children on school playgrounds. Equal access does not simply imply allowing children to be present. It means allowing them to participate safely alongside their peers, she said. She said she was nearly involved in a traffic accident involving an autistic student several years ago, which was part of the impetus for her suggestion. She said the issue wasn't simply about her child, but about all autistic students. School Board President Dan Matthews said the district already was looking into installing a fence around the playground. "We're looking into fencing options for the playgrounds," Matthews said. "We're getting quotes from companies, and we're in communications with facilities director of the school district," said Superintendent Drew Goebbels. "I met with the principal and the assistant principal." School bus delay on Tuesday. In an unrelated matter, the school bus delays on Tuesday morning were the result of the death of a school bus driver as buses were preparing to depart for the morning routes, Goebbels told the Clinton Journal. He said CPR and other measures were performed on the driver, but he unfortunately passed away. From the op-ed page, our Ron Paul plan 18 years ago, the Dear Clinton column, by Joe Mellon. Howdy, Clinton. Let's go back in time again. 2008 was an interesting year for me politically. I had never been interested in or involved with political parties and campaigns before, though I did go door-to-door with handmade Snoopy for President index cards 40 years earlier. Any interest I had in politics shut down after Watergate in 1972 and the resignation of President Nixon 2 years later. In November 1980, when I was first old enough to vote in my first presidential election, I selected John B. Anderson for only two reasons. He was an independent candidate, and he was from Illinois. Call me apolitical or fortunate, but I just don't have much interest in following politics the way it's typically portrayed in the media. Then came early 27 and my obsession with YouTube offerings. I happened across a couple of clips announcing the presidential candidacy of Texas Representative Ron Paul. I watched a few more videos, read a few articles, and soon was on board. I announced to wife number two that I had found my candidate, who quickly became her candidate. We started the 8th Ron Paul 2008 meetup.com group that would eventually have 1,000-plus groups and 1,000-plus members. It seems like every weekend we would pack up our stuff and our boys and head out somewhere in Atlanta to prepare banners and signs or to promote the campaign, like at Freedom Park. The national news announced the Ron Paul campaign's new all-time single-day fundraising record the evening of November the 5th, 2007, while we gleefully watched the real-time results online all day. Lasting friends were made in our local meetup groups, and while interacting with other groups, sharing help, suggestions, and similar stories. My highlights of the campaign included shaking Ron Paul's hand and watching him nearly win the online poll after the first televised debate. He was one of the last in his party to bow out in 2008, which ended an awesome once-in-a-lifetime experience for thousands of Paulers like me. For years, he remained a respected guest on news shows and still had plenty of funds, so he announced his candidacy for 2012 election in 2011. It was more of a cheer from the sidelines supporter in this time, rather than my constant involvement 4 years earlier. I guess I learned and experienced enough of the world of politics in the 2008 campaign. But I'd never felt more patriotic in my life than those couple of years learning about and supporting my candidate. And there will probably never be another one. Again, call me apolitical, fortunate or naive, I am just not interested in politics when there isn't a candidate, elected official, or legislation I can be proud to stand behind. What about you? Do you follow or support a political party or legislative action? Any information I get in the political theater comes from my friends on the phone or my bowling league, and occasionally from YouTube clips. Let me know if you think I'm not taking enough interest in things we should all be interested in as citizens of this country. Maybe I need to get the past behind me. Did you have a Watergate-type experience that tainted or enhanced your idea of politics at a critical age? Let us know, Clinton. Joe Mellon is a graduate of SDHS and Millikan University and worked at the Decatur Firestone Tire Plant. He raised his family in Georgia, wrote and published a book, and is happy to be back in central Illinois again. Have you something to share? Write us at GordonNormalLightNewspapers.com. And another editorial, Disgusted to Angry, on point by Richard Koritz. This past week, my political / constitutional emotions trended on the dark side with a little sunlight. I spent a lot of time on the road this past week between Lincoln, Bloomington, Decatur, Champaign, and Clinton. I was pleasantly surprised to see several residences and private businesses, in addition to governmental buildings, displaying the American flag. There is simply something about seeing our nation's flag properly displayed on a sunny day with some wind stretching it out that speaks to our way of life and government. When I see the flag, I am reminded of the cost that our nation paid to provide us with a free nation, which we all too often take for granted. The flag symbolizes the strength of this nation in its efforts to maintain our freedoms and way of life. I don't know why I seemed to notice these flags more last week than before, but I was impressed. Those who took the time to display the flags need to be encouraged to continue with their actions. As much as I was gratified to see the flag displayed, there were several flags displayed that I was thoroughly disgusted with. Several flags were torn, with the stripes coming apart and the ends totally frayed. The flag is meant to symbolize the strength and resolve of the American people. A tattered flag during peacetime reflects weakness and a lack of resolve for the nation. The flag is meant to show our love and respect for our country. A flag display that is worn or torn is showing disrespect to our country. If you displayed a properly maintained flag, please accept my thanks and the country's appreciation for your patriotism. If you displayed a worn or frayed flag, please reconsider your actions and obtain a new flag that truly represents this nation. Thank you. I truly believe our Constitution gives the populace the right to dissent. The Constitution does not give anybody the right to riot or unlawfully protest when the safety of others is involved. This past Sunday, the anti-ICE protesters egregiously crossed that line. The city's church in St. Paul, Minnesota, was holding its regular Sunday morning worship service. One of the pastors at the church is also an ICE administrator in Minneapolis. It appears that the protesters believe they could use this pastor's employment outside of the church as the basis to conduct a protest in the sanctuary of the church during its Sunday morning worship service. Video from the service clearly shows the worship service being completely disturbed by the protesters barging in and taking over the sanctuary. These are the protesters who claim ICE is violating the civil rights of immigrants, who are now violating the rights of those in a worship service. Our laws clearly protect freedom of assembly and freedom of religion. The protesters could have protested on the sidewalks outside. That would be unseemly and reprehensible, in my opinion, but not necessarily illegal. When they entered the sanctuary and disrupted the service, I believe the civil rights of the parishioners were violated. It also appears that Don Lemon, the fired CNN host, was present and filming the event. This protest appears to me to be a very well-organized effort to attack traditional American norms. These protesters are simply out of control by reasonable standards, and their goals seem to be to take down the country. This is a real and present danger. They want chaos, and they are getting it. DeWitt County is looking better every week. Richard Corax is an Illinois native, attorney, and former DeWitt County state's attorney. And still on the op-ed page, Election 2026 Letters. Re-elect Harris DeWitt County Clerk and Recorder. I am writing to express my sincere appreciation and support for Carrie Harris for the outstanding assistance she provided in helping us secure proper licensing for our recent event. Carrie went above and beyond to ensure everything was processed accurately on time, which kept our event on track without delay. Throughout the process, Carrie was proactive, communicative, and highly dependable. She coordinated with the committee, gathered any missing information quickly, and kept us informed every step of the way. Her professionalism and dedication truly stood out. Working with Carrie made the entire experience smooth and stress-free. She not only delivered results, but also made me feel confident and supported throughout. I am very grateful for her efforts and positive impact she had on our event's success. Sincerely, Rob Smith, RS Promotions. Supporting Harris for re-election as county clerk. To the voters of DeWitt County, I am writing to express my wholehearted endorsement of Carrie Harris in her campaign for re-election as DeWitt County Clerk. Having served one term, Carrie has already demonstrated a steadfast commitment to the best interests of our residents. Her leadership was particularly evident in her successful navigation of the tumultuous and highly contested 2024 presidential election, which she managed with exceptional grace and integrity. Her performance endured a smooth, secure, and transparent process for all voters. I had the opportunity to work alongside Carrie during my tenure as DeWitt County Board member. In every interaction, I found her to be professional, courteous, and in command of the details. This meticulous attention to detail is not accidental. It is a direct result of her numerous years of dedicated experience working within the clerk's office, including her time as deputy clerk. In today's challenging economic and political climate, it is crucial that we elect officials who instill public confidence, practice sound fiduciary responsibility, and hold values that align with our community. Carrie Harris embodies these qualities. For these reasons, I am proud to support Carrie Harris for re-election as County Clerk of DeWitt County, and urge you to do the same. Sincerely, Erin Kammeyer, former DeWitt County Board Member and proud DeWitt County resident. Wholeheartedly endorse Harris for County Clerk. I was appointed to the DeWitt County Clerk and Recorder's Office on December 1, 1982, where I undertook various responsibilities, including payroll and management. A short time after becoming County Clerk and Recorder in 1998, the Finance Committee and County Board posted a job opening for a new payroll clerk, and Carrie Harris was a successful applicant. As Carrie's supervisor, I observed her exceptional attitude, aptitude for payroll procedures, her ability to rapidly absorb new information, and her consistently excellent interpersonal skills. Throughout her tenure, nearly 25 years, Carrie Harris has demonstrated unwavering dedication, a strong work ethic, and a passion for delivering high-quality results. Her contributions to the County Clerk's office have been outstanding, and she has consistently demonstrated a deep commitment to excellence. Without hesitation, I wholeheartedly endorse Carrie Harrison for the position, citing her extensive knowledge and exceptional performances. Jane Usher, retired DeWitt County Clerk and Recorder in DeWitt County. Proud to support Ben Lowers for DeWitt County Sheriff. I've known Ben Lowers practically his entire life. Our families met in the same neighborhood in Clinton when he was just 8 months old and have been close friends for nearly 50 years. I watched him grow from a young boy to the man he is today, and I've always considered him an extension of our family. He chose law enforcement and public service very early as his profession. Growing up with a passion for the farm, I believe the time he spent in our home and his admiration for my husband's work as special agent with the Illinois State Police played a role in Ben's interest to join the law enforcement profession. Our two sons also followed their father's career path, and both remain close to Ben today. Ben began working for the Mason County Sheriff's Department in 1996, serving as a 911 dispatcher and corrections officer in the jail until 1999. In 1999, he was hired as a patrol officer for the Havana Police Department and went through his police training at the University of Illinois Police Training Institute. On his day off, he worked as a part-time deputy at the Mason County Sheriff's Department. Therefore, he has experience in the duties of a sheriff's department. In January of 2001, he saw an opportunity to come back to serve the community where he was born and raised at the Clinton Police Department. He became a patrolman under Chief Mike Reedy and was made sergeant in 2003. He was named the deputy chief in 2012 and then Chief of Police upon Reedy's retirement in 2013. He has had several good mentors throughout his law enforcement career. He is very well known in Clinton and DeWitt County. He is known for his friendly smile, for participating in school programs, and in many community affairs. He is compassionate about different people's needs and is helpful in understanding those he is serving as well as enforcing the law. He will bring a fresh outlook and energy in serving the Sheriff's Department. He clearly has had a long career in law enforcement and protecting this community and can do the same for our county. He has the background and is the type of individual we need and want in the office of Sheriff of DeWitt County. I am proud to support endorse Ben Lowers for Sheriff of DeWitt County, Janet Mannix of Clinton. In sports news, the Maroons 14-5 after win over Central Catholic. Mark Rogers reporting. By the stats, this should have been an easy game for the home team Maroons. But we all know that statistics can be misleading. The Central Catholic Saints were the foe in the matchup, and their record alone showed they should be an easy win. The first and second quarters went well, although a little bumpy for the Maroons, as the home team built a 3-point lead in the first quarter and added another 3 points in the second quarter for a 30-24 lead at halftime. The halftime entertainment kept the Maroon fans pumped up with a presentation by the Maroon M Squad, and then the pep band played. The third quarter proved the statistics are not all you should count on. The heart and soul of the Saints glowed in the third stanza, with them outscoring the home team and tying the game at 45-all leading into the final quarter. The fourth quarter saw the momentum shift from one team to the other as the Maroons fought back with a 17-10 run that ultimately gave them the 62-55 win. The Maroons were led by Jaden Bell with 21 points, including three three-point baskets, assisted by Keaton Graves with 18 points with 1 3-pointer, and Keegan Daugherty with 13 points and 1 3. The Saints had 4 players in double figures, but still came out on the short score side of the game. The Maroons are now 14-5 overall, while the Saints drop 8-8. Lady Maroons win over Tuscola, puts them at 16-4. Clinton. On Thursday, January the 15th, Clinton High School Lady Maroons hosted the Tuscola Lady Warriors on the Gene Vance basketball court. The Lady Maroons had the home court advantage and a better overall record. The first quarter through the third quarter were as expected, with the home team in double figures and the visitors scoring in the single digits. The Lady Maroons scored a massive 23 points in the first quarter alone to basically seal the game. The Lady Warriors fought in the home fourth quarter to outscore the home team 13-5, but it was way too little, way too late, as the Lady Maroons took on the win 58-33. The Lady Maroons were led by Carly Anderson with 17 points with 2 3-pointers, assisted by Clara Dempsey with 14 points, also with 2 3-pointers, and Lila Clover with 13 points. The Lady Warriors had 1 player in double figures, Reese Davis, with 11 points, including 1 3-point basket. The Lady Maroons are now 16-4 overall and 1-0 in conference play. Tuscola falls to 5-14 and 0-1 in the conference. And in news this morning, we have one obituary, Roberta Elaine Russell of Marble Hill, Missouri. Roberta Elaine Russell, 74, of Marble Hill, passed away on Monday, January the 12th. A celebration of life was held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, January the 22nd, at the Hutchins Pendergrass Funeral Chapel in Marble Hill, with Brother Ethan Ferris officiating. And in other news, Farmer City student named to Northern Illinois University's Dean's List, DeKalb, Illinois. Northern Illinois University announces its fall 2025 Dean's List students. To earn this distinction, students must meet a minimum semester grade point of 3.5 on a 4-point scale in the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, or a minimum of 3.75 on a 4-point scale in the Colleges of Business, Education, Health, and Human Sciences. Students from this area who have achieved the honor include Sarah Whitehouse of Farmer City, who is majoring in Art Studio. Whitehouse is a graduate of Blue Ridge High School. And on that note, I will leave you for this week. Enjoy your day, and I will be back with you next week.